Eddie Lenihan will be well known to you. Eddie, who's originally from Kerry but has lived in Croisín for many years, is a storyteller and author. Eddie's latest book is called The Man in the Big House. It details the memories of Jimmy Armstrong, who was one of the thousands of patients to pass through Ennis Psychiatric Institution. And you'll remember that last week we heard my visit to that particular building with the paranormal investigators to chat about their recent potential sighting of a ghost there. The Man in the Big House is out now. I'm delighted to say that Eddie Lenihan joins us in studio now. Good morning to you, Eddie.
Good morning, Eddie.
Thank you very much for coming in. So, can you tell us a bit about Jimmy Armstrong and this story and why you decided to write a book about it?
Well, I was recommended to Jimmy well over 40 years ago. And if you ask me now who recommended me to him, I couldn't tell you, but I was. And I visited the place. Now, at the time, I was a bit afraid of the place because it's an intimidating looking building.
It is. And when I was there, Eddie, I mean, I'd never seen it before, but it is, it just looks like one of those classic buildings from a horror film or something.
Well, all the more so today with the windows broken and all that.
Yeah.
But even then, when it was in operation, it's a huge building. And maybe they were built, those buildings, to intimidate. Because, for example, the one in Cork, on the Lee Road in Cork, you know, that's even bigger. It's two or three times bigger. But the one here on the Gort Road, big building. But when I looked at it that first day that I arrived there in November 40 years ago, in 1982, well, the funny thing was I was well received. I was very well received, and I was always well received there.
By the staff?
Yes, and okay. By Dr. Power, who was the CMO at the time. A great man, I have to say. Looking back on him now, he was a wonderful man. And a man before his time. He was a man who made me very welcome. And I think he understood that the best treatment for patients was to let them talk. To get it out of their system.
Yeah.
And of course that's what you have there in the book, Jimmy Armstrong's recollections. He was the one who told me what's in the book. And what I have always done in all of my books about the past is let the people talk for themselves. I'm not going to tell their stories. It was the very same in the book I did, Meeting the Other Crowd, about the fairies. And that book is in its 17th edition now. So obviously people would much prefer you to have the people tell their own stories rather than you telling the stories for them. So that's what I did with Jimmy's book. Let him tell his own stories. And by the Lord, he was very, very well able to tell stories about himself. And not just that, but Jimmy had the gift of memory. He was a wonderful man to tell what he had heard.
And Eddie, just before you tell us more about Jimmy, how did you settle on him or decide that Jimmy's was the story and experience you were going to write about in this book? Had you spoken to other people in the facility and maybe just his story resonated more, or was he the only person you chatted with?
No, because somebody outside had told me about him, that I should visit Jimmy, because they told me, and again, like I said to you, I don't know now who recommended me to him, but somebody had told me that there's a man you should talk to because he's a man who could tell you about the history of Quinn, he was from, about the Abbey, about fairy forts, about times gone by, that what he was good at. He was a man who was good with his hands. At a time, we'll say, during the Second World War, the emergency, he was a great man to fix clocks.
Okay.
He was a great man to
interesting
fix
skill to have.
Well, those kind of skills were needed at the time.
Yeah.
When everything, we'll say, during the Second World War was rationed. You couldn't get a tube for a bike. You couldn't get a tyre for a bike. Jimmy had a way of fixing things like that. Jimmy could rebuild a wheel. No, that might sound strange to us. Why would you rebuild a wheel for a bike? Just get a bloody new one. You see, we can buy everything nowadays. You couldn't that time. Jimmy, he'd go away and he'd buy the spokes, or he'd find the spokes from an old bike and he'd rebuild an old wheel from 36 spokes.
He must have been a man very much in demand at that time then, for given his skill set.
Because all the guards were going around in bikes, and the guards used to employ him to repair their bikes. That kind of thing. Oh, he was a man in demand. So he told me all about this in detail. He was a man who knew, as I say, about the fairies. He was a wonderful man to tell fairy stories. And you'd know from the detail in them that he was a man who had listened to old people. He was a wonderful man to listen. Because, you see, that's what the present generation are drastically losing. They can't listen. Or if they can listen, they can only listen in small snatches. Jimmy had some stories that stretched out and out and out. He was a magnificent listener. And there's a couple of his stories in the book that you have there. And, for example, the shower of old hags that fell next week. Now, that is one of the old nonsense stories that would make people laugh. And how would a shower of old hags fall next week? And the story continues in that vein that makes absolutely no sense, and yet it makes a kind of sense. And that's one of the stories that was sometimes told at wakes, at night, to keep the crowd awake at a wake. No, when wakes were a two-night affair.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, the time when all these games were played at wakes. And sometimes even the corpse was taken out of the coffin and danced around the floor.
That's fairly macabre, isn't it?
Could you imagine that nowadays?
No, not at all.
No, but that happened. Those things happened. And of course, it was scandalised. It scandalised the clergy, and it was scandalised people nowadays. How could such things happen? Now, dances, yes, and singing at a wake. But those things wouldn't happen nowadays. But 100 years ago, the corpse could even be taken out of the coffin and danced around the floor. but no disrespect was meant.
Yeah.
No disrespect whatsoever was meant. It was just, you know, being shown that we don't want to see you go. We'll have one last dance with you before you go. It was respect for the corpse. This was a different world than we live in. Nowadays, it is you file past the corpse inside in a dead house, inside, not even that, because there's hardly any wakes being held now, inside in an undertaker's. But Jimmy remembered those. Jimmy remembered those days. Maybe not personally, but he remembered hearing about them. You don't even remember that now. You don't even hear about that now. Jimmy had that wonderful, wonderful memory. Now, I have the recordings of Jimmy. Oh, how many of them? Hours and hours and hours that I recorded out there in that mental hospital. And it's all very fine, as I heard recently, or as I read recently in The Champion, about the documents that were discovered down in the cellars, down in the place outside. And people were delighted to find the documents that would otherwise have been destroyed. And it's wonderful that they were discovered, and now they're safe over in the library or whatever in the local history place. But that's not the same thing as having the living words of a patient like Jimmy, which you have there in the book. I quote him all. This is his story, and he's telling it in his own words.
And what you're doing, Eddie, reminds me. It has echoes of a piece we did yesterday with Caoimhne Van Clor, who are recording interviews with the older generation and characters around Clare who have the gift of the gab and who've heard a lot of stories and heard a lot of history, like Jimmy, and they're recording them before they're lost. It sounds like you were doing that 40 years ago.
They only started recently. I started doing what I was doing back in 1975. And the oldest that I recorded then could remember the Boer War.
At the turn of the century.
Absolutely. The oldest of the people that I recorded was born in 1898. That's why I regard people who were born in the 1930s as young lads. That sounds crazy. Because people who were born now in the 1930s would be what age now? three.
You'd be talking about nearly in your 90s, in your early 90s. 90s, yeah.
In my recordings at home, I have people now who would be in their mid-130s.
God.
So, I mean, that's quite a collection I have at home. And my problem is now, what will I do with it when I'm 72?
Well, you could have a whole series of books, maybe.
The next one I am working on now and have been for the last 5 years is Military Memories.
Hmm.
On my recordings at home, I have a man who met Hitler.
Wow.
Who met Hitler during the Second Battle of the Marne in 1918, when he was serving in the First World War.
It's an alternative history there. If he'd done something, maybe we wouldn't have had the Second World War.
Yeah, I know. But remember, what caused the Second World War was the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Treaty of Versailles and how the Germans were so badly treated in the Treaty of Versailles.
Certainly Hitler harbored a lot of resentment over that. But
absolutely.
That should be a very, very interesting book. But just to go back to The Man in the Big House, what kind of... Can you give us how long was Jimmy in a psychiatric institution, and what kind of stories did he tell you?
I would just say, to answer you there indirectly, too long. He spent many, many years, and finally he got himself out. He pestered every minister for health time after time until finally Barry Desmond, in one of the coalition governments, I think it was 1986, answered his query and ordered his case to be reviewed, and he was ordered, he was released into sheltered accommodation.
Okay.
But it was too late by then, and he died shortly afterwards. But he was released, if you call released the proper word, and he died in St. Joseph's, at least.
Eddie, when I mentioned the piece I did recently with the paranormal investigators at the building, and we heard a lot of the history then, and it sounded like a very sad and fairly miserable history at that facility. But you've kind of seen and heard but another side of it. It wasn't all bad. There was nuance there.
No, because as I saw it then in the years that I was visiting it, the nursing staff were wonderful. The nursing staff deserve wonderful, wonderful praise and credit, because they were great people. I would have nothing but praise for them, because when I was going in there now, under very difficult conditions, some of them, because remember, none of the modern drugs that we have now were available at that time. I used to hear shouting and roaring from some of the inmates then. And that was frustration in some cases. It wasn't pain. They weren't being beaten or anything like that. It was frustration, because a lot of them were truly mental patients. And if they had the drugs now that they have at present times, a lot of those patients could have been soothed and quietened. I remember one case one day when we were talking, myself and Jimmy, and we used to get our own private space to talk. The nursing staff were very good to us. They used to give us a private little room where we could continue and I could get on with my recording. And we would be called in at the end of the time we had and look, time up. And that was that for the day. I used to go in on every Sunday I could spare. And Jimmy would love to see me coming. You know, it was the height of his week, the nurses told me afterwards.
Break from his routine, I guess.
Of course. And somebody was making a lot of him to have me coming in doing this for him. Or it was making out that he was an important person. And of course, that was true. For him to know that somebody thought enough of him to record his stories. And time has proved that that is the case, that he still remembered today, because that book I was doing now for his sake, that he will be remembered. And you saw the dedication on it, I hope. But the staff were kind to him and very kind. And I occasionally used to hear the shouting from somewhere else, and Jimmy used to say, he'll be all right, he'll be all right. I suppose Jimmy was used to it.
Yeah.
He was used to it, but there wasn't the right medication. And I suppose the staff did what they could.
Such a pity, isn't it?
They could.
Yeah, it can't have been, as you say, there's more nuance in terms of what went on in there, but it can't have been a nice place when all is said and done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was a tough job. It was a tough job that the staff had, and they did what they could. There's no doubt about that. It was like, you know, we look back today at a different age. It is like blaming the church for everything. It wasn't the case at all. I'm constantly annoyed, for example, at this rubbish about the hospital that is stopped being built in Dublin by people, as somebody put it very well during the week, about this craze about invisible nuns. Get on with the bloody thing. Build the hospital and stop this messing. A hospital, what do they call the hospital that's being needed now in Dublin?
The National Maternity Hospital.
The National Maternity Hospital. Ireland is a country of extremes. We go from A to Z. I am convinced that is a legacy of colonialism.
Okay, black and white without the elements of grey.
We are constantly either one or the other.
Well, I think we can say, in terms of one or the other, this book is certainly on the spectrum of brilliant, a very, very interesting read. It's called The Man in the Big House, recounts the stories and memories and life story of Jimmy Armstrong. Well, well worth reading. Eddie, just before we finish, it is out now, but you are going to be doing a book signing?
At the Ennis Bookshop on...